Welcome in to Inside the Icebox here on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel and on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, talking all things Houston Astros, myself, Joe George, and Jeremy Branham. And today's episode is brought to you by Blue Star Tequila, the world's first and only night-harvested tequila. It's tequila at its natural, unfiltered best, made with 100% blue agave and totally additive-free. You can find it near you at bluestartequila.com. Jeremy, every time I feel like we do this show, there's another injury that we have to discuss, and we'll get to it. But today is kind of a trade deadline preview show because next week, I don't even know how we're going to record because the trade deadline's on a Thursday. The show comes out on Friday, but
we can do it live.
I think we're going to have to do it live the next
week. Do it live.
So the deadline will be passed by the next time we do a show together. So kind of today we'll kind of go through trade deadline options, how the Paredes injury factors in, if there's anyone off the table, all of that stuff, trades maybe they should revisit. And we'll start there because we'll start kind of talking about Isak Paredes. But I think there's clearly a hole at third base now. And the stuff from Dana Brown is not good. It is not good in any terms of like when it sounds like he could return to the Houston Astros. And my immediate thought, Jeremy, was, do they revisit Nolan Arenado? Like, is that where you start at the deadline of, yes, you need a bat. You need a lefty bat. There's rumors about them going after a starting pitcher. But do you call the Cardinals back? Do you call basically Nolan Arenado's agent and say, look, we are trying to win. We're good. Do we want to revisit this deal at maybe a lesser price because he's already rejected the Astros once? Like, would you call for Nolan Arenado if Paredes is out for a long period of time?
What is your what's your guess on when or if Isak comes back?
I think it's like 6 weeks.
Okay. So you think he comes back this year?
If he comes back this year. Like based on the information we have, like I think he's out for at least a month and a half. Just a guess.
Yeah, I'd probably go a little further than you. Mm-hmm. I think it could be like 2 months before Isak comes back. But even on those timelines, he's back, you know? Yeah. Like he's back. What is it? I guess it'd be September, it'd be September 23rd or whatever, late September. So that's in time for the playoffs. Now there's the rust element. He hasn't seen live pitching in, you know, a really long time, which is something that you have to factor in. But I do think they get Isak back this season. Now, how you handle the deadline, I think it's fair for Dana to pretend like he's not going to get Isak back the rest of the year, just in case he doesn't. Like, we know that these guys re-aggravate injuries all the time. The hamstrings are tricky. Like, these were different hamstrings for Isak Paredes, but there's a school of thought that maybe because the other one wasn't 100%, it was kind of pulling at the other. I'm no doctor. I just pretend to be one. So I do think it's fair for Dana to approach the deadline with the idea that Isak won't come back, even though I think he will. Which is just good insurance because you're probably going to have another injury. It's just the way that it works. Arenado, like, has been kind of average offensively. Now, you know you're going to get a really good defender there. I guess it would depend on how much St. Louis would pay his contract because Arenado, at this stage of his career, I'm not sure I would, like, really be banging down the door to go into the luxury tax for Nolan Arenado.
No, I'm with you. Like, I don't think he's hitting, like, as we do this, he's hitting, like, .244. on the season. I think he has 10 home runs. The defense is good.
He started hot, if I remember. Like, I remember he had a pretty good start to the year. So, like, his 92 OPS plus, like, over the last, I don't know, subtract the first month of the regular season, maybe it's closer to, like, 85. So,
yeah.
I'm kind of out on Arenado. Unless they just pay off the entire contract. They're like, hey, we'll pay it off. Just give us, an okay prospect. Okay, that's fine. But I really don't have interest in paying much of his salary.
Yeah, because if they paid off most of it and you gave up only an okay prospect and then Paredes comes back, well, it's like, all right, well, then, like, maybe Arenado is a ninth inning defensive replacement. He's a pinch hitter in certain situations. Like, I think there is a, you know, especially with, you know, the recent hot stretch of Bryce Matthews, like, you're not considering moving Paredes to second base or anything like that, but you're just going to have some insurance policy for if Paredes doesn't come back.
Yep.
And it just adds some bench depth to this team. I mean, think about, like, Cesar Salazar was on this roster for like 2 months, and I think he took 7 at bats. So it's like, what's the difference if that's Salazar and Arenado if the Cardinals are paying most of the salary? Like, I'm with you. Like, I'm not taking on that contract because it's not worth it. He's not that good anymore. And he's just, he's a safety policy. And frankly, right. though, like, I mean, unless like the Yankees are going to pony up for him, like, I don't think teams are going to be banging down the door for Nolan Arenado unless they pay a chunk of that salary.
I really don't either, unless it's desperate. And the Yankees would be more desperate than the Astros, maybe. I think they'd be more desperate than the Astros.
Yeah, I would agree.
Even though, like, Dubon's your everyday third baseman right now. But, no, I wouldn't be excited about Arenado, but if you could get him to pay off almost all of the salary, I think it does make sense. Like, he's your third baseman until Isak comes back. If Isak comes back, Arenado's the injury insurance, like you mentioned. Like, who knows where Jordan's going to be? Who knows where the rest of your team is going to be? So, if they're willing to pay the salary, okay, that's fine.
Especially because it's I mean, there's 17 players on the injured list with Lance McCullers going on with a blister. It feels like, you know, they can't have another one, but they keep having another one. Like, and the guys just aren't coming back. Like, we're still waiting for Pena. That feels like a slow rollout. Like, all of it. It's just these guys aren't coming back from injury. I mean, who knows when you're getting Jake Meyers back? Who knows when you're getting Jordan Alvarez back? So I do think, you know, looking at the deadline from an urgency need, I think adding the bat at the deadline to me does feel more urgent now. And I don't know if the way Bryce Matthews is playing like really complicates it, because maybe you don't want to trade for a second baseman. But again, you add a guy at the deadline, Joe Espada's got to figure out his lineup. Like, he'll figure it out.
I think Bryce can play the corner as well. Like, I think his future position at is second base. I don't think it really played in a whole lot to the Altuve move to left field. I think it had a minor impact in that. But Bryce is capable of playing third base. I don't think he's capable of playing it well. But, you know, if Dana's, like, looking at two different offers on July 31st, and he's like, okay, this one's a second baseman, this one's a third baseman, I think that the fact that Matthews can play third, if he likes the offensive bat at second base way more than the offensive bat of the third baseman that he's getting – I think Matthews' versatility allows Dana to be a little bit creative with offers and different kind of bats that he might be interested in.
Yeah, I think so too. It's gonna be really interesting, because like these injuries, they're piling up, and it does feel like while the Astros, you know, as we record this, have won a couple games in a row, and you know, feel like they're rebounding from the Guardians series and things like that, but it's going to be hard to win a lot of baseball games. They're as we do this again, because we're recording it, they're a half game out of like the best record in the American League. Like, how they've done this, I said on Tuesday on the station, Jeremy, I think it's the most impressive, you know, stretch of baseball we've seen from the Astros in the golden era, only because the amount of injuries you've had, it's just like, it feels insurmountable, but they just keep doing it. Like, they just keep having these minor league 4A guys. I mean, the Space Cowboys are just, they're crushing it right now in Houston. It's fascinating to me, but I do feel like it changes the tone a little bit. And I think part of that is you need your medical staff to be honest with you. Like with what they really think about Jordan Alvarez playing this year, with Jake Meyers, with Paredes. And I think Dana Brown has to really factor in all of these injuries now more than it was when it was just Jordan. It's a different conversation now, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you have, what is that, four everyday starters that are hurt right now? Yeah. Jordan, Isak, Pena, and Meyers. Jordan? I forget which one I mentioned. That's four, right?
Yeah, that's like, four, yeah.
Yeah, so almost half of your everyday starters that you expected to play every day are on the IL. And when you get them back, I think is going to be how Dana plays the hand, which – you know, maybe that's an indicator of what they think of Jordan. Like, if they trade for a left-handed bat that can only, like, DH and play left field, that's probably not a great indication they're very confident in Jordan. So, like, maybe that could be a bit of a tell, too, with how they handle that. They trade for, like, a, you know, an everyday third baseman. It's like, okay, well, maybe they don't feel good about Isak coming back. But they – in my mind, I'm with you. Like, they need to acquire a bat. Some of the things that I'm wondering too, though, are like, is Dana operating under the competitive balance tax? Like, is Jim Crane going to sign off on him being able to go over it? I don't know. Now you're looking at like repeat offenses. And then you have like, you do have money coming off the books this offseason, but maybe you want to spend some of that money too. So that's another interesting caveat that I feel goes under the radar a bit, because I'm not sure how eager Jim Crane is to go under the competitive balance tax.
Yeah, and I think some of these guys that you're seeing being, you know, floated out there of trade candidates from other teams, like like Edward Cabrera is a great example from the Marlins. Yeah. He would be a great addition for the Astros. You know, that's someone that he helps fill Fromber's role as Fromber enters free agency. He's very, very cheap for the next 3 years. And you've solved a cheap problem, a money problem, a Fromber problem leaving. But do you have the prospect capital to like to make that deal? Like it's it's very – the Astros are an interesting point because I do find all these now – it's picking up steam between – Rosenthal and Paxton and Jim Bowden, and like all these guys, like the Astros want to acquire a pitcher with some control. And that to me also means they know Fromber's gone, that they're not going to pony up for Fromber. And kind of like how Greinke filled the Gerrit Cole role when they acquired him at the deadline and then was here for a couple more years. It also feels like it would be wise for the Astros to just acquire a starting pitcher right now that fills Fromber's spot in the rotation. It strengthens you this year, but it replaces Fromber next season as well.
Yeah. I mean, there's a big difference in wanting something and having the assets to get something.
Yeah.
You know, like I want a $5 million beach house.
It'd be nice. Happening.
I don't have the, I don't have the means to make that possible. And that's kind of where I feel like the Astros are at though. Like I feel like their means aren't great now, unless Jim Crane's like, yeah, it's just go spend the money. I don't really care. Like that does open up some things, but they don't have the prospect capital. Like they're not going to win any shootouts for some of these top players at the deadline. Like some fan, hey, get Suarez, and Suarez would be great. Like that'd be awesome. He leads the NL in home runs. Like that would be an awesome addition. How are you getting Suarez? Like how are you going to beat some of these other teams that are also interested in a third baseman for them? You're not going to. Like it's impossible. I believe in the Astros development you know model and their philosophy in that. Like they turn over all these really good young players that help the big league roster at some point. But when outsiders look at this minor league system, they're not clamoring for a bunch of players. And when they look at somebody else's minor league system, they rather trade with this other team's minor league system than the Astros minor league system. So I actually think it's going to be a bit of a dud of a deadline for the Astros. I think they will trade for pieces, but I think they're going to trade for some like left-handed bats that like are very obscure names that, you know, we may have never heard of before that are making like $1 million in the final year of team control. So I have a hard time believing that the Astros are going to be able to make any major splashes. I think there are moves out there that can be made within, you know, reason, within, you know, the confines of the luxury tax and within the reality of the minor league system that can help the team. But I don't think we're going to sit here on deadline day and be like, wow, Dana Brown with this major splash. I just don't think they have the resources.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And it just that's what makes it interesting. So you're talking to teams that maybe are really going to sell and they have, you know, three or four pieces that they're going to move. A name that seems it's popular because of what he meant to the Astros in the past, but also that he's pitching much better of late. I feels like he would be a valuable addition to this rotation. Uncle Charlie getting a lot of run on social media about if the Baltimore Orioles want to move off of him. And you look at his last, you know, six starts, most of them have been pretty good. Like that to me is kind of the ballpark the Astros are in. Is you're trading for Charlie Morton. You're probably not trading for, you know, Zach Gallen or Merrill Kelly.
Why would you want to trade for Zach Gallen?
Because you're the Astros and he used to be awesome.
I trust the Astros, like, and I trust Dana Brown in acquiring pitching because they've earned it. They've earned the benefit of the doubt there. If they trade for Zach Gallen, my trust is going to be tested.
Because why?
Did you watch him the other day?
I know.
Awful against the Astros. His numbers this year are terrible. Okay, you know, you say Kikuchi's numbers weren't great last year when the Astros acquired him. Okay, let's pull up the old baseball savant. Okay, Kikuchi's got stuff. Okay, Kikuchi strikes out a lot of guys. Okay, there's some things that you would like with Kikuchi. You can understand why the Astros think they could, you know, pull some levers and get the most out of Yusei Kikuchi. What? Give me one trait that intrigues you about Zach Gallen, because I can't find one. If the Astros are like, yeah, we can get the most out of him, I'll be like, okay, you've earned my trust, but let's see how it goes. I'm out on Gallen.
No, I mean, I think in general I'm with you, but it's just, it's like they just have this benefit of the doubt right now with pitching that, like, if they trade for someone, I'll be like, all right, like, he's probably going to be awesome for the next, you know, 2 months and hopefully pitching some playoff games for the Astros, but it's just, you can
talk me into Morton, by the way. I'm with you on the Morton thing. Like he was awful at the start of the year. I think he might have like missed a start or even may have landed on the IL. I can't remember. But recently he's been really good up until his last start, but that was at Tampa Bay. So like, whatever. Like I look at that Tampa Bay ballpark kind of like I look at Coors Field. I don't really look at a pitcher's line score when they pitch there. So I could be talking to Morton. The thing though is that he's owed $15 million. So like, is Baltimore going to pay that down? Are you going into the luxury tax for Charlie Morton? That's the question that none of us know. Because if Jim Crane signed off on it, yeah, Dana, go help this team. I don't care about the luxury tax. Then Charlie Morton's a name that, okay, that makes sense. But if Crane has not done that, we can all but eliminate Charlie Morton.
Yeah, and I think back to the interview that you know Jeff Luhnow did with Chandler, where they talked about that. Where Luhnow was talking about how when they were trying to acquire, you know, Greinke and other guys, that it was Jeff was having to come in and go to Jim Crane's office and be like, this isn't going to be enough. And, you know, when Jim Crane wanted Zach Greinke and other players, it's like, okay, well, we'll take a little more money on. Like, well, they can take less and less money. Like, we'll take a little bit more on to sweeten the pot to make the deal work. So, yeah, it's what you're saying. Like, he has to be willing to do it. And I think what is clear is, like, there's a certain level of, I think, like, star power that comes with it. Like it has to have jersey sales behind it. It has to have, like, from a business perspective and not just a winning perspective, but a business perspective, has to make sense for Crane. And we don't know who those players are, to what you're saying. Like, we don't know if Charlie Morton, you know, brings in, you know, the Space City jerseys or whatever they're called now. Like if that those jersey sales for Charlie Morton outweigh some of the acquiring for him. If it really thinks, you know, adding players at the deadline, you know, that player at the deadline makes them a legit World Series contender again. Like, those are the things that Jeff Luhnow really laid out, is that when they traded for Verlander, they were able to show Jim Crane, we can win the World Series with him. This is how much more money you can make by just going to the ALCS and going to the World Series. And if we win it, how much money even more you can make. So Dana Brown's got to do his convincing if he wants those kind of players, honestly.
And I think what you said too about Crane, like liking the sizzle, right? Like he likes the shiny new thing. He liked Greinke. Like he was, you know, he was drawn into the idea of acquiring Greinke and what it would have meant. And I think he does have a bias towards pitching too, because he was a former pitcher. But that's the unknown. Cause like we're throwing out a bunch of these names and it's like, yeah, that guy would help. Yes. This guy would help. That guy would help. Well, if Crane's telling Dana Brown that you can't go over the competitive balance tax this year, you can scratch off 98% of the list, because the Astros are right up against the CBT. I think it was like $2 million under, according to Kotz. Like, it's right there. Like, they're right on the brink of it. I thought it was a clue whenever Jeff Bagwell was on the broadcast the other day. He was I like when Bagwell's on the broadcast, actually. Some people don't, because they think he's boring and, you know, hates analytics and stuff. But I like it because he has, like, I think he has good old stories. I do like his insight. And then sometimes I also feel like, because he's so tight with Crane, that he kind of gives us information. And he was like, yeah, the Astros are on a budget this year at the deadline. So I was like, oh, like, yeah, we always, and look, Crane could change his mind in 3 days, right? Like,
yeah.
This was, I guess, before the All-Star break. But it just resonated with me. Like, Bagwell, who's very tight with Crane and thinks of himself as a GM, basically. Like, he probably thinks he's Dana Brown's boss.
Yeah.
Like, he's sitting there like, we have a budget. Oh, I mean, he was talking about the deadline. They were talking about the deadline when he said we had a budget. So it's like, okay, if he's saying that, that makes me think that Crane either won't sign off or hasn't signed off yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's, again, it's the greatest unknown. So let's go from a pessimistic view here, okay? Right. We don't know where the Astros are at injury-wise. And let's say they do add an arm to the rotation, but it's not a big name. It's not someone that, like, excites you, even like even has the intrigue that, like, Kikuchi had.
Yeah.
With where they stand right now, you know, just over 100 games into the season with all these injuries, like, what are your expectations for this team? Because in my mind, I'm like, well, I feel like they're still capable of going to the ALCS with everything that's happened with all the injuries, but having Hunter and Fromber at the top of your rotation still feels like that way. But if they don't add at the deadline, I think that the fan perspective will change and feel a little bit worse.
You're probably right with that stance, like that last sentence. I wouldn't agree with it. Like, I would, you know, I would counterpoint that to the, like, what if you get all the guys back? Like what, I mean, Dana could do nothing at the deadline. You get everybody back, which we know is very unrealistic, but you do. All of a sudden, Myers is there. Pena, an all-star, is there. Yordan, the best offensive player in your organization, is there. Isak is there. So, like, I'd feel pretty good about the offense if you just got healthy. Like, if you didn't acquire a single bat at the deadline, but you got 100% health and they recover when they were supposed to recover, they hit the timeline that, you know, they don't have timelines, but whenever they, you know, we expect them to come back, that's a good enough offense to make a deep run. Same thing with the pitching staff. Like, you don't have anybody coming back that would be like a dominating number three. Like, you wouldn't have anybody in the same tier as Fromber and Hunter Brown, which is fine. You don't need that. But can they be better than Brandon Walter, who's been very, very good? Like, I think Arrigetti can. What does Javier look like? What does Garcia look like? Like, you have – if you get all those guys back and they're like 90% of what they were, you have Hunter Brown, Fromber Valdez, Brandon Walter, Luis Garcia, Christian Javier, Spencer Arrigetti. Like, those are six guys who are legit rotation guys. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I'm a little unsure what Javier is going to look like, unsure what Luis Garcia is going to look like because they're coming off major arm surgery. But if we take it from like an optimistic point of view with injury, but a pessimistic point of view from the trade deadline, I think you are a World Series contender. Yeah. Now, if you're running out the lineup in the playoffs that you ran out Wednesday afternoon against Arizona, no, I expect them to loot, like, be one and done.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And that's where it's, you know, this season, just like, it just feels like it's just teetering right now on what it could be. It could go, it really feels like there's an extreme. I still feel confident that they're going to win the AL West right now, even though like all these injuries have happened. But if they don't make a move at the deadline and these injuries and these guys don't get healthy, like, it also wouldn't shock me if they unravel a little bit. Like, just to be honest, it's hard to envision this team consistently winning series with this lineup that they're having to put out there. Like, if you don't get healthy, if you don't at the deadline, it will be such an incredible accomplishment to, I think, just make playoffs. Yeah. But you're right. But then if they get healthy, they can win the World Series.
That's a really good word for it. It's teetering, because like, if you play out the optimistic, you know, path and all these guys are healthy and performing close to their potential, probably the best roster in the American League. Like, am I wrong with that? Like, if everybody that we just listed and talked about comes back to not even 100%, but 90% of who they are, they're the best roster in the American League. Now, what if Yordan comes back and is who he was before he was placed on the IL? What if Myers comes back and he was who he was last year? What if Pena comes back and he doesn't have that hotness that he had? What if Isak comes back? And, like, these guys coming back, but they're just not performing at the level that they're capable of. Like, that's not going to cut it in the playoffs either. So the trade deadline is more of like a crutch. Like, it's a crutch to the injuries that you currently have and a bit of insurance to the injuries that you currently have. But, yeah, I think teetering is a good word, because I could see this team winning the World Series. I could see this team stumbling down the street. Like, I have a hard time envisioning them missing the playoffs, even if they get nobody back or nothing at the deadline, just because, like, it's a gritty bunch and they're resilient. And you do have Fromber and Hunter Brown, and those guys are really good. And I like some of the young pieces. Like, Cam Smith has had a good, really good rookie year. Altuve's still doing his thing. Caratini's had a really good year. Walker's performing better. Yiner hopefully performs better. So, like, I still think that they would make the playoffs if they get nothing done at the deadline and nobody comes back. Like, Pena's going to come.
Go ahead.
No, it's just like, my expectation that at minimum they make the playoffs. If things go well at the deadline or in terms of health, I think they could win it all.
Yeah. I pretty much totally agree. All right, we'll take a break here. We will hear from our friends at Blue Star Tequila, but when we get back, we'll talk about a bold prediction from Chandler Rome in The Athletic, what we've seen from Hunter Brown. And I got a question, one more trade question. I'm going to throw something out there at Jeremy, which it's, I don't know, he might accuse me of having a bad take. We'll see. All right. Well, first, let's hear from our friends at Blue Star Tequila to teach you what night harvesting is really all about.
In the highlands of Jalisco, as the fierce heat of day fades into dusk, the sun dips below the horizon, and our jimadores begin their work. Harvesting our precious agave azul beneath the glow of stars, while the night air is cool and calm. Away from the harsh heat of the sun, we protect our agave's freshness, locking in essential natural properties and sweetness, and preserving its unique flavor profile. This world-first practice has been warmly embraced by our Himadores, who relish the soothing embrace of evening school air as they work beneath the moonlight. 100% agave azul. Night harvested, unfiltered, and additive-free. We invite you to taste the Blue Star difference.
Thanks again to Blue Star Tequila for sponsoring the Inside the Icebox podcast. Reminder as well, starting the next 2 weeks, we'll be launching a Texans podcast as well, also brought to you by Blue Star Tequila. And starting the first week of August, Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays, you can catch me from 6 to 7 p.m. on Last Call with Joe George after the Killer Bees. All right, bold prediction from Chandler Rome. The Athletic put it out for one for each team. Chandler did the Astros, of course. He said, bold prediction, the Astros trade for Merrill Kelly. I like it. I like the idea of it. It's everything we just talked about. But, like, if that's the piece at the deadline, I think that would be a A-plus move for the Astros. Honestly, because I don't think they have any prospects in their system that I would be upset about losing. I can't pronounce his name. What's the starting pitcher's name in Sugarland?
Oh, I don't really know. Miguel Ulloa?
Yeah, I think that sounds right. It sounds right.
Ulloa? Something
like it's probably that. The one guy, like, I would think Astros fans would be disappointed because there's a lot of hype around.
Really?
I don't think – who else would there be? I mean, I don't think they're going to trade Bryce Matthews.
Are we counting Bryce is the system?
Yeah, I think so, but that would shock me.
Yeah. I mean, Ulloa, I wouldn't want to trade him either. I guess it would depend on the return. I like this Kevin Alvarez kid, the guy they got from, well, I guess he's from Cuba. He's still playing like in the rookie league, and it's very far away. Like his ETA is like 5 years probably. Yeah, that one would sting a little bit. Walker Yannick I like, but I think I'd be okay. I mean, he's a catcher that's, you know, I think he'll be a big leaguer, but I don't know if he's going to hit like an above average catcher level. So he predicted Kelly, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Merrill Kelly was his prediction.
What is Merrill Kelly making? Let's see, about 18 a year? Oh, not a year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think this would be a good move. Like, he would immediately be one of your top four starters. Mm-hmm. I would like Merrill Kelly, Houston native, if memory serves. Merrill Kelly, I don't know where he went to high school, but I think he's from Houston. Yeah, I'd be good with that. I have no issue with Merrill Kelly. Like, I mean, I need to see the return. Like, I wouldn't want to trade Cam Smith for him.
Yeah,
sure. You know, Bryce Matthews, Kevin Alvarez for Merrill Kelly. I wouldn't feel great about that.
Yeah.
So, like, obviously, I need to still see the return. But if it was a return that I'm comfortable with and Merrill Kelly was the piece coming back, I think that he's one of your top four starters.
All right. So, I have one. I'm not saying this isn't, like, my take that it's going to happen, okay? But with something we talked about last week, I've been thinking about the catcher spot a lot. If the Astros wanted to be really bold, I think they should trade Yiner Diaz at the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what you get back. Like that, that's
but like Caratini can be the guy. Like trade like Yiner, like you have Walker Yannick, like he's your future catcher, most likely.
I mean, he's still in Fayetteville. Like it's too early to call him the catcher of the future. Like ideally in a perfect world, you're right. But like what he has shown so far, it's like, do I think he's gonna be the catcher of the future? I can't say that yet.
Yeah.
I hope he is. I like the pick. I saw Walker Yannick play a ton, played at Sam. Right up the road. I do play-by-play for Houston baseball. We play them three times a year. So I've seen a lot of Walker Yannick. I like Walker Yannick. I'm not ready to say that he's the catcher of the future yet.
Sure.
Now, I don't hate your take. Now, some of the negativity we've heard about Yiner this year is fair. Totally fair. Like, I've been disappointed in Yiner this year. But it's very easy to forget that 2 years ago, he hit 23 home runs in 104 games. It's very easy to forget that he flirted with a 300 batting average last year. Like, how many catchers in baseball? And Yiner is not a great defensive catcher. I've knocked his catching a ton. I think he's a bit lazy. He's not great at blocking pitches in the dirt. People, he doesn't allow wild pitches. That's great, but he doesn't – the catchers can't allow wild pitches. He doesn't allow pass balls. Yeah, but how many wild pitches is he giving to his pitcher by not helping him out? So I'm not crazy about Yiner's receiving. I think he's one of the worst receiving catchers in baseball, but he could potentially be one of the best offensive catchers in baseball. Like how many catchers could hit 325 homers a year?
Not many.
Two or three?
Yeah.
Like Yiner has the potential to be the best offensive catcher in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trading him, you have to be convinced that he's not going to be, that like his work ethic isn't there, that his defense is killing you. Because if you trade him and he becomes the best offensive catcher in baseball, whenever he was still in his first 6 years of club control, that will be looked back at as one of the worst trades like in the decade for the Houston Astros.
Yeah, and I think that if you're going to do it, you know, you're not trading, you know, Yiner for Uncle right. Charlie. Like, you're talking about a guy who does have A-plus Cy Young stuff, who's been struggling a little bit this year. I think, like, that's the Sandy Alcantara trade, who has some control, who can be, like, that level. Like, it's – if you want to swing for the fences for, like, a really good pitcher or player, but you don't have the farm system, like, Yiner to me is the piece that I would be most comfortable moving of anyone else on the big league roster. Like, I mean, it's hard to say that about Bryce Matthews, like, but I'm assuming that Dana Brown, with Bryce being his first round pick, has like some major like love for that pick and that player, which is why I don't think he really is on the table unless it's for the right move. But like, if you want to go, you know, for big fish, yeah, like you need something to catch it with, and I just think Yiner could be that guy. I know.
Was there a pun? Was that a pun?
No, it wasn't supposed to be, but it turned into one. Pun? Yeah, it was an accidental one. As I was saying, he started laughing. I was like, that was good, Joe.
It was good. See, I immediately thought about Miami, too, whenever you brought up Yiner. And again, you better be convinced
that
he's not going to live up to his potential. Which, look, I like bravado. I like when a general manager has cojones and he's like, you know what? I'm going to trade Kyle Tucker. Hey, what a move, man. Like, the cojones you have to trade Kyle Tucker, I applaud that. And then you also get Cam Smith in the deal, and you get Isak Paredes in the deal, who's been really good. It's like, okay, not only did you have cojones, but you had like the guys that you wanted that you knew were going to come in and help you quite a bit, even though I think that Cam Smith probably helped him out sooner than they thought that he would. My thought was more Edward Cabrera, Jesus Sanchez.
Sure.
Because now you get a controllable arm that I think is a top three, top four in your rotation, and then you get a left-handed bat with really good power that you've been clamoring for quite some time. So I'm not anti-trading Yiner. You just better be right, and you better get some players that are high-end and probably controllable.
For sure. Looking at the team as it stands right now, what we've seen of recent, I think the, you know, the injuries do kind of convolute a lot of what's going on with the Astros and how to evaluate this team. So specifically with Hunter Brown, last two starts coming out of the All-Star break was weird. He wasn't going to pitch in that first series. Then he did. They said it was a typo. Strange, kind of all of it. I don't believe that it was a typo. It's a total lie. It's a total lie. Why did you have to lie? Just say you changed your mind. Like, where he was pissed off and is mad that everyone was doubting him. Like, but he wasn't really that good again. Like, his last two starts have been shaky. So I'm just curious from your perspective, like, what you've seen from Hunter Brown in these last two starts.
Sure. I mean, you can go back to the last three. I mean, the two starts he had before the All-Star break were subpar, and, like, the velo was down and stuff like that. The line score against Seattle wasn't good, but I liked what I saw, actually. He looked like Diesel as opposed to the Hunter Brown we saw against Texas in the final start before the All-Star break. Like, his fastball was up there. He was getting a lot of strikeouts. The offense wasn't doing him any favors. Like, they had quick half innings. Hunter Brown had to go back out there with, like, almost no rest at all. The runs he gave up in that game were pretty cheap. Like, I think he gave up two runs in the third, if memory serves. If you go back into that inning, one was, like, that Master Boney annoying dude who, like, squeaked a base hit past Altuve. They had weak contact. Julio Rodriguez got an infield single. Like, they were BABIPing him to death. They weren't squaring him up. And then the next inning, he gave up a run whenever he hit the leadoff guy, which I think was on purpose. Not 100% sure, but I think was on purpose. And they manufactured that run. Julio Rodriguez had a chopper up the middle that scored him a two-out cheap single. I was actually encouraged with what I saw from Hunter Brown in that start. I know that the line score didn't look good, but I thought Hunter Brown did. I thought he pitched much better than the line score indicated.
Yeah, I think it's – look, and honestly, like, it's Hunter Brown is – to say he's a problem or has a problem, it's like I need a larger sample size. Like, you know, it's – now, going into the break, like, was there some fatigue concerns? For sure. Yeah.
No, I mean, if he comes out of the break with an extra – like, an extra day or two of rest and he's throwing 95 again, that would be alarming. Like, that would be a major concern. But he wasn't. Like, he was throwing 98, 99. he dipped back down to like 96 with the four seam after that short half inning, and he was up to like 70, 80 pitches, but that's to be expected. Mm-hmm. I was encouraged with the stuff from Hunter, and that was more important to me going forward than he gave up four runs in four innings or whatever it was, three runs.
For sure. Yeah. So, I mean, and besides that, again, like the Bryce Matthews stuff has been awesome in Arizona. Just seeing him crush the baseball like that. I mean, Cam Smith, I think, is going through it a little bit again, but kind of to be expected. I don't think it's going to be perfect all the time for a rookie. And hopefully this is just a sign of things to come for Bryce Matthews, because it's the power. I didn't expect it. I don't know what to expect. Like, I don't think it doesn't always translate minors to majors. I mean, like, think about Lo Profeto and all those home runs on different level prospect here, but like all those home runs Lo Profeto hit, you know, in the minors, and then didn't really do that in the majors at all. So I think it's really positive what we've seen from Bryce Matthews. The best play though was the reach, where he had to reach out defensively and grab it and still get the tag at first base. Oh, yeah. That was an awesome play from Bryce. Yeah.
I mean, you could easily go double play too. The double play in Tuesday night's game. Yeah. That was not an easy play. Like off the bat, you're like, oh, that's in right field. And then Matthews dies for it. It's like, oh, okay, they're going to get one. Oh, they're turning two here to end the game. Wow. No, he's been encouraging. Tascasita, so like my old stomping grounds, my old neck of the woods. In fact, I called it a high school football game he played in. He quarterbacked for Tascasita.
Okay.
Like he's an athlete, obviously. Yeah. He has pop. Like you knew he had pop. Now, you know, Phoenix has elevation. That was kind of the knock on him coming up, is that he didn't really hit well in Sugar Land. He feasted on PCL ballpark. So yeah, you want to see it other places, obviously. But I mean, the pop was there. The thing with Matthews is going to be, can he reduce the strikeout rate as he progresses as a big leaguer? He still strikes out a lot. This year, he was way better than he was last year. So, like, he's trending in the right direction. But even if he strikes out a lot and he hits 25 home runs a year, not this year, obviously. But, I mean, what if he hits 230 with 25 home runs and strikes out 150 times? Mm-hmm. That's fine. Like, that's okay. Yeah. That's an everyday starter. Like, probably not a middle of the order guy. But you give me that kind of, you know, production in the seventh spot, playing second, I'll take
that. Yeah, for sure. Final thought here then on Bryce Matthews. Scale 1 to 10, 10 being the best nickname you've ever heard, 1 being the worst. What do you think about the Bryce is Right?
Not a fan.
I don't like it either. I don't like it.
I think it's probably about a 2-4 maybe.
Yeah, it's not good.
How about Bryce Baby?
I like Bryce Baby. I think you could do some fun stuff with a movie poster, change Bruce Almighty to Bryce Almighty. I think would work a little bit. I don't like Bryce is Right. It's not, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a game show guy. So I think the game show nerds love it.
Here's the other thing too.
Ram shirts, like the t-shirts look great, but like, I wouldn't buy it.
Like, I think that a nickname should be like kind of synonymous with you, right? Like, it kind of like backs up who you are. Like, you think of, like, you know, Jordan, what they call Jordan, Air Jordan. Mm. Why'd they call him Air Jordan? Because he would fly through the air. What are some other like Tracy McGrady? Well, T-Mac, that makes sense.
Yeah.
What other nicknames come to like Iron Mike Tyson? Like, the dude looked like he was, you know, sculpted in iron. Price is Right, I think of like old gray haired people.
I know.
Bryce is this 24-year-old hip, cool guy that's hitting bombs. Yeah. Like, he doesn't fit that name.
Like, maybe when he's like 30, like 35, and his MLB career is almost over, you run it back. But like, yeah, I don't think it fits.
It doesn't fit him at all.
And then, so just gut feeling right now, do you expect, you know, I guess you said it already, but you feel like you're leaning more towards like it's going to be more of a dud of a deadline? Like, you don't think that, like, you know, while you guys are at Carbach on Thursday at the deadline, that it's going to be popping off and we'll be dumping beer on Blank's head to celebrate?
I hope so. That'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. Reason.
Now, look, Dana, like, I don't think that Dana gets credit for being as, like, bold as he actually is. Like, he's kind of soft-spoken. He's, like, mild-mannered. He's not a very, like, loud individual. He's got a very, like, quiet personality, I think. So, but you look at the trades that he's made. I mean, how many general managers in Astros history would have traded Kyle Tucker in the offseason? You know, how many general managers in Astros history – I mean, Luno would have, but like, the Kikuchi trade was a pretty big trade. Mm-hmm. Like, that was pretty splashy. So I think that Dana is a lot more courageous than people give him credit for. I think he's bolder than people give him credit for. So, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if Dana did something, because I think Dana does that sort of thing. But because of where they are financially, because of the minor league system that they have, I find it hard to believe that they can make a splash trade. I think they'll find like a right-handed reliever that's cheap, that doesn't cost much. I think they'll probably find a left-handed bench bat that maybe he just takes over for John Singleton. Mm-hmm. But I have a hard time seeing them do something at the top of the trade deadline candidate market.
Yeah, I know. I tend to agree with you. And I think, look, if anything's possible. But if it does happen, I think we'll be getting really, really close to that 5 Central deadline. It's going to be a last minute steal from a team if they're able to pull something off. Because
what was the Kikuchi? Was the Kikuchi the deadline day, or was that the day before?
I feel like it was deadline day.
I hate how Major League Baseball changes the deadline days now. I know they do it for like TV and like, you know, engagement and all that sort of stuff, and they want it like on one specific day. Yeah. I think the deadline last year was like on the 30th.
Yeah. And now it's the 31st. And
last year they acquired him on July 29th.
So that was before the deadline.
Unless I just don't remember the deadline day, right?
I feel like I actually think it was like August like 2nd last year. But yeah, I think that was before the deadline.
July 30th. July 30th was the deadline last year. So it was the day before.
Day before. Yeah. I mean, look, so it's we're on trade watch for the Houston Astros. We're on this entire podcast has to be deleted watch because they made a trade. No, I don't think
it's deadline watch until next week. I really don't. I think Monday starts deadline watch.
That's like really when it gets going.
Yeah, like I mean, there's probably gonna be a trade between now and then. Yeah. But in terms of like the heavy activity, like in a lot of organizations too, they kind of go week to week with things. Like when do you and look. Mondays, like every minor league team has off on Monday. So like it naturally does that. But when do you see like promotions in the minor league system? It's always on Monday. So I think that baseball naturally goes week to week. So I think it would be natural for the deadline stuff to pick up heavily on Monday.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. All right, he is Jeremy Branham. You can catch him every day, Monday through Friday, with the Killer Bees, himself and Joel Blank and Brian McDonald. Again, 3-6 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We'll be back next week for another edition, a post-trade deadline edition of Inside the Icebox. And this show has been brought to you by Blue Star Tequila, the world's first and only night-harvested tequila. It's tequila at its natural, unfiltered best, made with 100% blue agave and totally additive-free. You can find it near you at bluestartequila.com. For Jeremy, I'm Joe George. We'll be back with you next week. Peace.